everybody, and welcome to the John Likes Movies podcast. I'm your host, John Gilpatrick, and I'm here once again with my good friend and regular co-host, Max Coville. Max, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks.
It's our first podcast of the new year. Did you have a good holiday season?
Yeah, it was pretty good. Can't complain.
More importantly, did you have a good holiday movie-watching experience?
Yeah, about that.
Oh, not so good.
Well, it came down to the wire. Like, I was so burnt out from seeing everything at the beginning of December that time Star Wars came out, that was about the end for me.
Yeah, it's really funny. I was the same way. I'm trying to, like, cram in as many movies as I can before I have to vote for, like, our Critics Awards. And I end up, like, watching more movies during, like, you know, from Thanksgiving to, like, mid-December than any other time of the year. But I end up writing less during that time because I'm trying to just watch things and they all end up blending together and I don't feel like I can form, like, coherent statements or theses about movies to write a review about. So it's sort of like a weird time, but I'm happy to be back and, like, watching movies at a normal pace again and writing about them. And, you know, I had a pretty good holiday movie watching season, if you will, up until yesterday, which I'm sure we'll get into. But yeah, we're recording this on the Sunday afternoon. We're a few hours away from the Golden Globes. And basically, we're going to talk about our Oscar predictions because the nominations are going to be announced this week. We're also going to touch on some of our favorite movies of the year, performances of the year, and at the end kind of run down our top 10 list respectively. So should be a jam-packed show. Max, before the Globes, do you have any sort of outlandish predictions about the show that will either make you look really smart or really silly when this actually goes up?
Oh, man, I don't know. I guess maybe one too many of Ricky Gervais's jokes falls flat and it's just silence.
That's not an outlandish prediction, but I think it's definitely a good one. I got out of the Golden Globes prediction game a couple of years ago because I just never could seem to get anything right. But, you know, we'll see. I'm sure it'll be a nice night for Spotlight and in the comedy area. I don't know, Big Short or Martian probably, but it'll be... It's usually a pretty good time. I'm definitely going to miss Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. Not the biggest Gervais as a host fan, but whatever. It'll be a change of pace from what we've gotten the last couple of years, so I mean, that could be something good.
Yeah, I mean, I like the setup of the Golden Globes a little bit more than the Academy because it feels like just a dinner where they're drinking and they're having a good time, whereas the Academy, it's, like, a lot more stuffier, I think.
But it's definitely a more fun show, I think.
Yeah.
Even if, you know, you can't really take too much of it seriously, considering that there's, you know, 90 people voting on these things. And everyone knows, I think, how easily influenced many of them are.
Oh, yeah, certainly. And while they go too broad, they do TV and movies where both the Emmys and Oscars are, like, the prime time events of those particular categories.
Do you watch a lot of TV?
I watch plenty. Yeah. I don't watch as much as some, but yeah, I watch a lot.
Yeah, I'm always kind of woefully uninformed when it comes to the television stuff that's going on right now, and it's one of my I guess New Year's resolutions, so to speak, which is kind of pathetic that my resolution is to watch more TV, but just become a little bit more well-rounded in my, you know, pop culture obsession, whereas I watch so many movies and find that I don't really watch much TV, don't read enough, and kind of trying to, like, balance that out, find a nice, like, healthy balance between all those things.
Well, it's difficult with television, I find, because whereas movies, they're just a two-hour experience most of the time, a TV show can take you anywhere from 20 to 10 to 20 hours, really.
Oh, yeah, and over years, because you can't stop watching something, like, once it starts. but we're not here to talk about TV, we're going to talk about movies, and why don't we jump right into our Oscar predictions, and we're going to run down basically like how I described as the major categories and then kind of the mid-major categories. So picture, director, actor, actress, supporting actor, supporting actress, we'll do both screenplay categories, and then we're gonna do foreign language film, animated feature, and documentary feature, and kind of leave the craft categories to the craft experts out there. But you know, maybe we'll talk about one or two things when it comes to those categories also. But do you want to start with Best Picture?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, well, we're starting with the top first, but let's go ahead with that. And I guess what we have to decide right now is how many do you think the Academy is gonna bring in this year?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. Since they kind of expanded to this between 5 or 10 realm, I think we had 9 the first year, 9 the second year, and 8 the third year. Is that right?
Oh, I'm not sure.
I think pretty sure that's the way it's gone. So I think, I mean, let's just kind of run this down. I have like a few that I think are definitely locks, and then I have a few that I think are kind of on the bubble in, and a few that are on the bubble out. And why don't you let me know if all everything I'm saying sounds about right? I've got The Big Short as a lock.
Okay.
I've got Mad Max Fury Road as a lock.
I'm still iffy on that.
Okay, interesting. I've got The Martian as a lock.
Yep.
I've got The Revenant as a lock.
Yep.
I've got Spotlight as a lock.
Yeah.
Okay, so those are, and to me, if those were the, you know, if we were in a year before, you know, 2009, those would be the top five. Maybe Mad Max Fury Road could have been a little bit on the bubble in that scenario. But some of the other ones that I think are probably solidly in are Bridge of Spies,
Yep.
Brooklyn,
Yep.
Carol.
Yep.
Okay, those are my top eight right now.
Okay.
I have Room in right now, but that's my ninth, and if there's only eight, I don't think Room gets in.
Okay.
And then kind of the next couple that could come up and steal a spot from Room or maybe even Carol, I've got Straight Outta Compton, I've got Inside Out, but I have both of those out right now.
Yeah, I could see that. I guess the biggest ones that I think is like if I was only doing five, I'd do Spotlight, Big Short, Martian, Revenant, and Bridge of Spies.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that too. I think Bridge of Spies is in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just because as much as I like Mad Max, the critics like Mad Max, I don't know how much the Academy likes Mad Max.
It's true. I mean, there's definitely going to be people who do not like Mad Max, but I think when you're looking for like that movie that's going to kind of come in and really kill it in all of the below the line categories, editing and sound mixing and sound editing and all that stuff, like Mad Max kind of has all those elements plus the critics, and I think, you know, people probably admire George Miller, so that's why I have it in maybe a little bit more strongly than you, but it sounds like we both think it's probably in.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I mean, if we say even like six or seven, then yeah, it's probably yeah.
Sure, okay.
What I think is interesting, and certainly something that is not outside the realm that they could do, is for a ninth entry, put Star Wars in just for the viewership, and people would watch it.
Yeah, that's definitely the precursor. Like, love hasn't been there to support that, but I wouldn't rule it out by any means. It's kind of in that, maybe for me, 12 to 14 range.
Yeah, it's almost like too big to fail. Like when Avatar was out, it's like Avatar didn't really score that well, but they were like, "Oh, it's the biggest film of the year," so.
That's true, and it was similarly sort of, you know, the last movie to screen, and obviously a huge box office hit. We haven't seen one like it since until now, but I don't know, Star Wars. Yeah, we'll see. That'd be a surprise to me, but not like an unmitigated shock, you know.
Right.
So do you think there's going to be nine?
No, I think they'll stick with eight.
Eight. Okay. So of my top eight, Big Short, Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, Carol, Mad Max, Martian, Revenant, Spotlight. Do you have the same eight?
Yeah, I'd say I have the
Okay.
same eight.
Okay, cool. So
I think while I love Brooklyn and Carol, they're probably the weakest just because I don't know why they haven't been getting as much love, but they haven't been, so
what do you think happened to Room?
I don't know. Maybe it's A24. Maybe they're just not a big enough player right now.
Yeah.
Room is their biggest film. Like, I don't know if it's even their biggest commercially. I know Ex Machina is probably their biggest commercially. And yeah, then Spring Breakers, but...
Well, it's weird that Room still hasn't... I still haven't seen it. It hasn't expanded to my area. I know a lot of other people are kind of asking me about that. I know in real life, like, I heard this movie Room is going to be a big like Oscar movie. Like, I haven't, it's not playing around here. Like, what's going on? And I'm kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Sort of think that it's time, it's past time to, you know, spring that one on the public, especially since it's you know, seemed like a sure thing like a few months ago in Toronto, and now it's really on the bubble.
Well, we'll see what it, well, this might be just A24's first venture into that Best Picture field. I think next year they're releasing The Witch wide, I just heard, so that will certainly make them a bigger player.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's a new, they're a new studio,
a growing.
Yeah, definitely. And growing in both, you know, number of films and prestige of films. And, you know, maybe this is sort of like a young studio's lesson that needs to be learned. Let the people see the movie.
Yeah.
All right. So we're pretty in lockstep there. The only difference is that I do think Room is still going to get in. You think it's out. Do you want to move on to Best Director?
Sure.
Because this is an interesting one, because we're recording this before the Directors Guild has named its five nominees. So maybe this one's a little bit more up in the air than it will be, well, than will seem, you know, right before the nominations are announced. But my top five I have right now, Iñárritu for The Revenant, Thomas McCarthy for Spotlight, Adam McKay for The Big Short, George Miller for Mad Max Fury Road, and Ridley Scott for The Martian.
All right. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, so your two outliers would be...
Todd Haynes, probably number six, and Steven Spielberg, number seven.
Yep, that makes sense. I don't know. This is, again, another thing where those films look like to be the top films, whether or not they pull a big upset and say, like, one of those directors is not worthy and just put, like... Spielberg or Haynes in there instead would make sense.
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of an interesting year because a lot, you know, I think last year you had a lot of movies that were in contention for Best Picture but weren't as showy as this year's movies. So you have things like The Revenant, The Big Short, Martian, Mad Max that are like so in your face and expansive in different ways, but, you know, lots of things going on and loud and outdoorsy sets and just a million different pieces coming together. And last year wasn't really the case, so I think you had kind of a weirder lineup. But this one seems like, you know, all these big movies are so obviously directed, even if I don't think they're necessarily the best directed movies. And the outlier in that case is Spotlight, but that's the strongest movie of the bunch for Best Picture, so it'd be weird if Thomas McCarthy didn't get nominated, right?
Right. And, well, I always had an argument when I first saw Bridge of Spies is that I just think it's good Spielberg. But yeah, the fact of the matter is what I've heard about it is that if it was not Steven Spielberg, we'd place it much higher. And that maybe it's just because his catalog is so vast and his pictures are so good that...
I see what you're saying, yeah. Yeah, like
we're
underselling it a little bit because Spielberg has done such amazing things in the past.
Right.
It's kind of funny. It's a movie that, you know, and we're going to, throughout this predictions process, kind of talk about some of the things that stood out to us in 2015 from a filmmaking perspective. And Bridge of Spies isn't something that I put on my top 10 list or my top 20 list. Didn't really garner serious consideration for either. But it's a movie that still kind of stuck with me since I saw it in October. And I'm really curious to see it again. And it's kind of the same way I felt about Lincoln, which was Spielberg's last film from 2012, where I was like, I watched it and I was just sort of like, okay, that was good. Like, I didn't love it. There were things I did love, things I didn't love. And it just kind of stuck with me. And then when I saw it, when it came out on Blu-ray, I kind kind of clicked a little bit more, and I'm wondering if something similar is going to happen for me with Bridge of Spies, where I'm like, oh, I sort of missed something the first time around, and that's why it stuck in my head so much.
Right. I could definitely see a lot of people maybe missing Bridge of Spies in their evaluations and stuff like that. Even like Tom Hanks was pretty good in that movie, but it's just like we've seen Tom Hanks be so amazing before that his understated role just didn't really hit a lot of notes.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny that in a year where, you know, we'll get to Best Actor soon, but seems like it's pretty down near for that category that Hanks didn't really make a dent still, you know? Right. And you think about a couple years ago when he was so good in Captain Phillips and missed out on a nomination, like if that movie came out this year, could he win Best Actor? I think possibly.
Yeah, he was so good in that.
So Best Director, do you agree that like those are probably the five that I listed, or do you think that maybe Haynes gets in?
Yeah, those are the locks. I mean, I think that even though The Big Short has so much momentum right now, I think McKay is probably the weak link in there.
I agree.
Everybody else has like some background or some presence, I guess.
I think it's also the fact that it is Adam McKay, and you're sort of like, I wonder how seriously some of the directors are going to take his contributions to that movie,
right,
considering it's a comedy, considering where he comes from. But, you know, talk about a movie that's just so, like, it's got so many elements going on. It's like it kind of checks all those boxes of editing and acting and all the rest of it, that I think that, you know, he'll get rewarded when it comes down to it. Real quick, can you hear, it's raining pretty hard here. Can you hear that?
Yeah, I can hear that.
Oh, I wonder how that's going to go.
Well, everybody listening, we have rainstorms.
Yeah, sorry. It's a beautiful day outside. I went for a walk this morning and it was like 50 degrees, but now it's pouring raining. So it's going to be a nice ambient sound to your podcast listening today, I guess. We kind of breezed past Best Picture, and I never really asked you, like, if the 8 or 9 movies that we're talking about are the nominees, like, what do you think about that as a Best Picture lineup? Do you think it's, like, stronger than usual, weaker than usual? What stuff that you really liked is not in contention, and then kind of what are maybe some of your favorites of the ones we talked about?
Yeah, all right. Well, basically, I think that it's a solid list. I don't think that it's, I don't think it's top to bottom winners for sure.
Yeah.
I really like Spotlight as my film of the year.
Right.
I know it's already receiving the front runner backlash, as they say. But I think it's an impeccable movie, and it's exactly what I wanted from it.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I did really enjoy Big Short. I think that I'd recommend it to a lot of people. It's an entertaining look at the 2008 like economic meltdown.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly like dry, and it's very funny. Some people complain that The Martian isn't really an Oscar movie. It's just a really good event movie, but I don't know. It's good. And Mad Max Fury Road is probably the finest action film of the last few years, and that's why it deserves to be in the category, because I think it's going to have that same kind of effect that The Matrix has, where years later we're looking back at how innovative and brilliant it is.
Yeah, I think it's a better than usual lineup. I thought last year's was probably the worst that I could remember in my lifetime, frankly. I did not like Birdman. I actually did not like Boyhood. I really didn't like The Imitation Game or American Sniper or The Theory of Everything. And so I was kind of left like hoping that Selma or Whiplash is going to do something unexpected, which, you know, was clearly never going to happen. So I was really kind of out on the Oscars last year, to be perfectly honest. But this year, two of my three favorite movies of the year are possible nominees in The Big Short and Carol. And Mad Max Fury Road's in my top 10. Spotlight's on my top 10. Really like Brooklyn. Really like Bridge of Spies. There's one big stinker in the bunch that we're gonna have to find some time to talk about, which is The Revenant, which I just saw yesterday and really, really hated. But overall, I can forgive that one oversight and say that I think it's a pretty strong crop, assuming that this is what ends up happening. My favorite nominee, or my favorite movie of the year, excuse me, is probably not a nominee. I think it's going to pop up in our discussion at some point, so I'm gonna just leave that piece of fruit hanging out there for right now.
That sounds good.
So let's move on to Best Actor. And as I kind of alluded to earlier, it's a kind of a strangely weak year for leading actor performances, at least as far as the Oscar kind of group goes, I think. Leonardo DiCaprio is the lock of all locks for The Revenant. I think everyone's expecting him to win. I think after that, you have a couple guys who seem pretty strong, but I wouldn't say anyone else is a lock. I think Bryan Cranston for Trumbo is probably going to get in. I think Michael Fassbender for Steve Jobs probably gets in. And I think Eddie Redmayne for The Danish Girl probably gets in. Do you have those four in?
Yeah, I mean, I can see those. I seeing Trumbo, I don't really think that movie is that anything spectacular. Bryan Cranston is good in it, but I don't know if he's really a lock. There's plenty of other guys who I could say would just be in there. I guess I would say yes, Leo is a lock, and given how weak of a year it is, it would be shocking if he doesn't win.
Yeah, I agree. I to be perfectly honest, I think the only guy at this point who stands a chance to knock him out is Cranston, just because of some of the nominations he's gotten from, SAG and the way that film's been received by awards voters versus critics is vastly different. And I agree with you that I don't think I watched it again last night. Because my wife hadn't seen it, she was kind of curious about it, and I think it's an entertaining film. I don't think it's a particularly well-made film, but I get why people in Hollywood would embrace it more than me in suburban Philadelphia, because this is like their people. So if a lot of people are seeing The Revenant and aren't appreciating what's going on there, then maybe they've cast a vote for Cranston, who's a veteran and who everyone appreciates now from his work on Breaking Bad, and does a good job portraying one of Hollywood's own in Trumbo. But we'll see. I think the fifth spot is probably, gosh, I don't even know, between Matt Damon for The Martian, Johnny Depp for Black Mass.
So you're saying Michael Fassbender is not in it at all now?
Oh no, I have Fassbender in.
All right.
Yeah, I think it's Cranston, DiCaprio, Fassbender, Redmayne are in, and then the fifth spot comes down to maybe Damon and Depp.
So even though maybe like someone like Steve Carell, who's most likely the lead for Best Actor, he could get in, or.
Yeah, that's possible too, I suppose. I hadn't really considered it too much. Just because I think that Christian Bale was getting most of the acting sort of accolades for The Big Short, but I could see Steve Carell getting in. Kind of, that I think The Big Short is sort of like this year's American Sniper, which is a movie that I think got added to to 2015 pretty late in the game.
It did. Like they were thinking just to release it next year, but it was screening so well, they said.
Yeah. So they moved it up into this year, and it kind of just from there it started to snowball, and it's become this really big Oscar sort of behemoth, which I think right behind Spotlight, it's going to be the movie of the morning on Thursday. So yeah, Steve Carell could get in. That wouldn't shock me, and I wouldn't hate it either.
Another performance I thought was particularly good was Michael B. Jordan in Creed. It'd be nice to celebrate an actor of color in this category, certainly. That's not the only reason to nominate him. He's very good in the film.
Sure. Yeah, he would. If I was making a list in my top five, he'd be on it. My favorite male leading performance of the year has zero chance of getting in, which is Ben Mendelsohn for Mississippi Grind. But, I'm not banking any of my hopes on that happening.
No, I mean, although there could be a surprise here or there, someone could miss. I don't think it will go that deep.
No, I don't think so either. What was your so Matt Damon maybe for The Martian, Johnny Depp for Black Mass? You're from Boston area. What did you think about that performance?
I actually did not see Black Mass.
Oh, okay.
My fellow Boston critics told me not to see
I think they steered you right.
So that's one movie I have not seen yet, so.
Yeah, that was a dud. So, I don't know. It seemed like a sure thing if like back in September, but nobody like I don't hear from anybody who actually likes that movie or that performance. So, I don't know. It would be weird, but at this point, I don't really know who else kind of steals a nomination from some of these kind of weaker other people.
Yeah, I don't even think like Eddie Redmayne's the best role in The Danish Girl, I think.
No, me either.
So it's tough.
Yeah, we'll
Really
see it.
weak.
Yeah, really, really bad category. As much as I dislike The Revenant, I'm almost like grateful that DiCaprio's a front runner of this bunch because I don't really love any of them. And at least we can kind of put an end to the DiCaprio needs an Oscar narrative, you know?
I guess the one thing that I thought was interesting the other day, considering how well the Revenant did this weekend in the box office, would how different would Steve Jobs look if Leo did accept that role?
Yeah.
And he would be the lock of all locks as Steve Jobs,
Yeah,
and
he definitely would.
the pitcher
Maybe.
would be in contention probably for best pitcher.
Yeah, you're probably right. I think that having read about The Revenant and that originally it was supposed to be Samuel L. Jackson in the lead role is pretty interesting. And then after Samuel L. Jackson, it was supposed to be Christian Bale.
Yeah.
So, maybe one of those guys would be looking at an Oscar right now if that plan had stuck. But instead, it's DiCaprio, and that's fine. He's a great actor, so I'm not going to lose any sleep, even though it's not my favorite performance of his in a movie that I do not think is very good. But moving on,
The hardest category on the card?
Definitely. I mean, definitely the deepest. There's a lot of different kind of things at play here that I'm not sure about when it comes to how people are going to perceive leading versus supporting for a number of different people. So I think that,
Well, before I interrupted, John, we
yeah.
are talking about the best actress category.
Correct. Yes, I'm. Thank you. Talking about Best Actress and some of the questions I'm referring to specifically refer to Alicia Vikander in The Danish Girl and Rooney Mara in Carol, which I think both are leading performances. They're both being campaigned as supporting, probably because this is a really deep category. And they've kind of been relegated to both by different voting bodies, so it's kind of a tricky thing to guess. But I think everyone can probably agree that Brie Larson in Room is a lock, and Saoirse Ronan in Brooklyn is a lock, which I now know how to pronounce her name very well, I think. And I think Cate Blanchett in Carol is a lock as well. Do you agree?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So we're on the same page, 3 for 3. Do you think Jennifer Lawrence still gets in for Joy?
I don't know. I'd like to see Charlotte Rampling for 45 years get in on the list.
That would be nice.
So I don't know if that's the only other loophole on my list. Like I haven't seen Joy yet, so I don't know how good or how bad she is,
I
but
haven't seen it either. Everything I've heard from friends and family and other critics has been, not good movie. She's pretty good in it. You have,
and she's Jennifer Lawrence.
and that, well, and then that's the thing, right? She's Jennifer Lawrence, so could she miss? I mean, it would be a surprise to me if she didn't get in. But she's certainly not a super strong contender like kind of the other three women we discussed. So I think she's kind of on the bubble. And then as my fifth, I have Alicia Vikander for The Danish Girl.
Yeah, if they say that she's best actress, then that's the category I think she'll get in for it.
Yeah.
I think that her role in that movie is the most compelling reason to watch that movie.
I agree 100% with you there. yeah, not my favorite movie of the year, The Danish Girl. And I think you and I have discussed this on Twitter in the past, is that Tom Hooper sort of has a bad reputation. And I like The King's Speech quite a bit. I like Les Mis quite a bit.
I don't mind him as a director. Some people would say he's a hack, but
I don't think that's true. I just think that his worst impulses came out in this movie, and combined with Eddie Redmayne, who I've never really found to be a particularly compelling actor, it just didn't really work. But Alicia Vikander really salvaged big chunks of that movie and kind of made it more palatable for me.
So have you gotten an opportunity to see 45 Years?
I have not yet, and I really want to. I love Charlotte Rampling. She's one of my favorite actresses of all time. But for a variety of reasons, it hasn't worked out for me to see it yet. I'm hoping to see it soon. But, yeah, it's been it's kind of the white whale of this screener season for me.
Yeah, like, she's fantastic in that movie. So
yeah. And I really like Andrew Hay, like his last film, Weekend, which was really terrific. So I think that 45 Years is something that I'll connect with pretty deeply, but haven't got a chance to see it. I'm still rooting for her because I think that if the movie gets nominated, then there's going to be an easier chance for me to see it. but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of other possibilities out there too. You know, if Rooney Mara gets recognized as a leading performance, I think she could get in, maybe over Jennifer Lawrence.
So I have an interesting question for you. I didn't see Suffragette.
Oh, right. So yeah, sure.
And would Carey Mulligan be stronger had she not been out on pregnancy leave?
Huh, that's a good
question. If she was able to campaign, because she wasn't able to, so.
I don't think so.
No?
I mean, she's good in the movie. It's a kind of a fine movie, but I think that with so many other women giving great performances that are getting recognized by various groups, like, I think that she was destined to kind of fall off. I'm a little bit more surprised that Suffragette is the movie that people are considering her for versus Far From the Madding Crowd, which I thought was much better, and that her performance was better in, too. I guess that was, you know, something that came out in May versus October, so that's the problem there. But, yeah, it's a little too bad that she's not in the conversation in some capacity a little bit more, because she had a really strong year overall if you look at the body of work. So Emily Blunt for Sicario is another one that I thought would have been a little bit more in contention than it seems to be, especially since the film has gotten some Guild nominations here and there, and I just think that she's tremendous in it, and the movie itself is tremendous. It's one of my top 10.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I really enjoy the movie as well.
Charlize Theron, Mad Max Fury Road, probably not going to get in, but would have made me really happy. I think she helped, you know, is the driving force behind one of the strongest female action movie characters of all time.
Her in the category saw made me think, too, like, I thought, like, maybe she could have been for Best Supporting Actress. The way that some of them were playing, although she is like the focal point of the film, I guess. But
it's sort of tricky because the movie is called Mad Max, but
right.
Mad Max himself is not sort of the driving narrative force when it comes to characters. It's Furiosa. So I don't know. That one just never really, as much as Mad Max Fury Road has been in the conversation, Charlize Theron hasn't been so much. And it all comes back to, I think, the SAG nominations, which were super weird this year, especially in this category. And we had Sarah Silverman get a SAG nomination for I Smile Back and Helen Mirren get one for Woman in Gold, which nobody was really expecting and has kind of shaken up the race in some unexpected ways.
Yeah, Helen Mirren is one of those other actresses that it's just like she's there, so she's always impeccable. So
Yeah, I think that she typically makes like really palatable movies for the general sort of awards voter, and so they're tempted to watch it, and you know, she does a good job in the movie. It's just not, I think, on par with some of the other actresses we're talking about.
Oh, the one that I was getting her confused with was Maggie Smith for Lady in the Van, which was
Oh.
also a one of those you see her name and be like, oh, all right.
Yeah, definitely. And she did actually end up with a BAFTA nomination, which I guess isn't super surprising considering, you know, it's a British production and she's a British famous British actress, but I don't think that's going to translate to an Oscar nomination. I think we're probably looking at a top five of Brie Larson, Saoirse Ronan, Cate Blanchett, Jennifer Lawrence, Charlotte Rampling, and if Alicia Vikander is leading, then she'll knock off Jennifer
Rampling or
Lawrence, or
Lawrence, yeah.
yeah.
Okay, let's go to supporting actor now.
Yeah, okay, because this one's an interesting one too. There are probably, I mean, maybe eight or nine legitimate possibilities here. I have as my top five Christian Bale for The Big Short. I have Idris Elba for Beasts of the Southern Wild in my notes. I need to change that. Beasts of No Nation. I have Mark Ruffalo for Spotlight. I have Mark Rylance for Bridge of Spies, and I have Sylvester Stallone for Creed.
Yeah, well, I don't have any of the Big Short members on my list. It's tough to really say who is lead and who is supporting in that. Like you were saying earlier, Christian Bale was getting a lot of attention. Maybe they could consider him best actor.
They definitely could. That wouldn't surprise me either. I think it's this case with Spotlight where I think probably everybody is supporting in reality. I don't think that movie is defined by one narrative thread over another.
And it's
But
interesting that you said Mark Ruffalo, because I agree that Mark Ruffalo has the best performance in that film, but a lot of people would say Michael Keaton is probably the standout and supporting actor nominee for Spotlight.
I think that Mark Ruffalo gives my favorite performance in Spotlight as well. I think Michael Keaton is probably my number six of these, just on the outside. But Ruffalo has that scene that you just can see it being played at the Oscar ceremony, can't you?
Yeah.
And Keaton doesn't have that scene, which doesn't mean he doesn't do a good job and that he isn't going to be loved by a lot of people. But, you know, are they looking at him and seeing, you know, capital A acting on display the way that Ruffalo does?
Right, it's not as showy.
Right, exactly.
It's things that I've heard that roles like, say, Bill Murray in like Broken Flowers or Lost in Translation, they're not as showy roles.
Yeah, you're just living in the character, which is great. And frankly, that's kind of the acting that I typically respond to more. But, you know, I don't know. It's a deep lineup this year of supporting actor contenders, and I think that he could get forgotten if Spotlight is splitting votes like a lot of people are expecting it to, and Ruffalo kind of stands out a little bit more.
Out of anybody though, I do agree that Mark Rylance is a lock for Bridge of Spies.
Yeah, he's the lock on the board. I think he is probably going to be the winner, frankly.
After I saw that movie, I was telling people that I knew. I'm like, if you want to like win your Oscar pool or surprise a lot of people and haven't seen this movie, just tell them like this is who you pick, and
Yeah.
you'll surprise them. They'll be like, oh, you saw that, and you'll be like, no.
It's kind of funny talking about, you know, showy acting versus more restrained acting. And I think the neat thing about Rylance's performance is that it's so restrained that it's almost showy in its restraint, if that makes any sense.
Oh, it makes sense.
Yeah, it's another one of those reasons why Bridge of Spies has kind of stuck with me a little bit more than I expected it to, because I just thought he did such nifty work as in that movie. And I think Sylvester Stallone, I'd love to see him get nominated, and I think if he does, he could be a possible winner just for, you know, a lot of emotion behind the character and the movie and that role and what he brings to it this time. It'd be neat to see that happen.
Yeah, so some of the upsets, like from what you had mentioned, On my personal list, when I did supporting actor, I selected Paul Dano from Loving Mercy.
Okay.
I thought he was fantastic as Brian Wilson, and that he makes that movie the attention that it should get. Because I didn't really think that John Cusack was that amazing, and he was just fine. But yeah. Paul Dano really gave me the essence of what Brian Wilson is, and I think it was a very strong performance.
Yeah, I thought he did a good job, too. I think that another person probably on the outside looking in, but that could get in and is one of my favorite supporting actor performances of the year is Michael Shannon in 99 Homes. I just thought he kind of oozed menace and brought a lot to that movie, which is just on the outside of my top 10 this year.
From what I've heard of it, since I have not seen that particular film, yeah, I've heard that he's really good in it. And I guess I could see the love coming over to him. It is a smaller movie. Like it depends how many of the Academy have seen it as well can vote for it.
Yeah, it's smaller. Broad Green Pictures distributed it, but I think they're doing a really good job at getting it out in front of people. And, you know, I don't think many people were expecting him to be in contention. So the fact that he's lasted this long, he got a SAG nomination, means a lot. Would love to see him get in. I think Jacob Tremblay from Room is probably on the outside looking in just because that movie's not been doing so well.
It's funny. I was just going to mention him. Do we say that if he gets in for supporting actor, we could expect to see the movie in Best Picture? It could show how much they like it.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair to say. That it would surprise me if he got a nomination, the movie didn't, because that means that they saw it and that they're appreciating it, and that, you know, he's knocking off somebody else who seems a little bit more, a little stronger coming into the nominations.
I mean, it goes to show that we're still talking about his performance, and it's a youth performance. I mean, there's few youth performances that really translate into nominations, never mind like winning or anything.
The last one was probably Beast of the Southern Wild, which I accidentally mentioned a little while ago in Convention A. Wallace. But I guess the last guy that I'll probably mention in supporting actor as a possibility, maybe Benicio del Toro for Sicario.
Okay.
I don't know. It doesn't seem likely at this point, but you know, that movie I think has the potential to kind of be a bit of a surprise and take some nominations where people aren't expecting it to. And if that ends up being the case, kind of like Room, if it ends up with more nominations than we think, then Del Toro could be one of them.
How about Tom Hardy for The Movie You Hate?
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible.
They could be looking at it like he had What a Year of Legend, Mad Max Fury Road, and The Revenant.
I love Tom Hardy, and that wouldn't upset me, but I don't know. It seemed like the sort of performance, just like before people saw The Revenant, that would definitely get a nomination, and the fact that it kind of fell off, I think, scared me off. Like, I had it as one of my predicted five when I first made my Oscar predictions in November, and no one had seen The Revenant yet. And then after people saw it, he was kind of falling off of other people's predictive five. And so I thought, okay, well, maybe there's just not that much there. And having seen the movie, I think he has a lot to do. He has one really good scene, I thought. But I don't know, against people like Stallone and Rylance and the Spotlight guys, I don't know that he has enough juice there, but we'll see.
All right. That would lead us to supporting actress, which is a mess of itself.
Yes, it is. Well, you know, and like we talked about in Best Leading Actress, there's the Alicia Vikander question, which is doubled here because she has an actual supporting performance that people are going to be considering alongside her leading / supporting performance in The Danish Girl. Do you think that I'm predicting currently that she gets in for both categories, that she gets into leading actress for The Danish Girl and that she gets into supporting actress for Ex Machina. Do you think that's possible, likely, unlikely?
I I don't think she gets in for both.
No. Okay.
I think that if she gets in, and if they like Eddie Redmayne, then sure, then they could both get in for Danish Girl. But the way that the film has been received, I think maybe it's just from us outside looking in, is that everyone seems to want to perform her for her ex Machina. See, I'm having trouble pronouncing it. Ex Machina role. I'm butchering it.
That's
and,
okay.
Yeah, so she could get in for more. There seems to be more hype around that. More people appreciate her role for that. And certainly when I saw her in that earlier in the year, I was like, who is this actress? I need to know more about her. And what a year she had. So
yeah, she's really great. I mean, you know, we both praised her earlier in the show about her work in The Danish Girl. I think she's even better in Ex Machina, and it would be one of my favorite, you know, sort of Oscar morning surprises if she ends up with a nomination for that movie, because it's a character that's so integral to a movie that I loved. And she does a really good job. I think it's sort of like, I think when you look back on 2016 and you're looking back at like when.
Look back at 2015?
Yeah, 2015. when you look back at 2015 and the year that Alicia Vikander became a star, I think we're going to remember Ex Machina before we remember The Danish Girl, to be perfectly honest. But we'll see. As long as she gets a nomination, I think most people will be happy. Two would be cake, but we'll see. Do you think Rooney Mara gets in here as a supporting performance for Carol?
I think she'll be on the board no matter what, unless her votes get canceled out. But
yeah,
if she's not in Best Actress, she's in Supporting Actress. She actually was on my Best Actress of the ballot.
Mine too.
So I think that her Supporting Actress is category fraud, but whatever. If she gets in, she gets in.
I, you know, the way I'm kind of looking at it, hers is my favorite female performance of the year. And as long as she gets a nomination, I'll be happy. I don't really care what category it's in at this point. I do think that with Harvey Weinstein distributing Carol, he's going to get what he wants. And he wants those two actresses in different categories. So I think that's the way it's going to play out.
Yeah, because I mean, I think Rooney Mara is just as good as Cate Blanchett and Carol, if not.
Yeah, they're both outstanding. They both like feed off each other so well, and they have such good chemistry. And I mean, I can't say enough about both of them, and also the movie itself, really just tremendous. And I mean, looking at who else is out there, I have Jennifer Jason Leigh in for The Hateful Eight.
The first time we've mentioned Hateful Eight.
So. And now is the time where I'm going to pick up that fruit off that I left hanging there when I said I'm going to mention my favorite movie of the year a little bit later on, and we've come to that point. The Hateful Eight is my number one movie of 2015, and it's kind of a bummer that it's probably not going to do too well when it comes to the Oscar nominations. I'm glad that Jennifer Jason Leigh probably gets in for supporting actress. I'd love Samuel L. Jackson to get in there somewhere. I would love Tarantino to get in there somewhere. I think he'll get a screenplay nomination, and hopefully some of the craft categories, it has a respectable showing. But yeah, it was just kind of knocked my socks off. It was Tarantino operating on a different level than I've ever seen him do that before, as far as a movie that's not self-contained and that kind of goes into the real world in some pretty fiery ways, and the things that he has to say about society today through the prism of this murder mystery in post-Civil War West was really neat. I just thought he did a great job, and I appreciated that everyone in the movie is despicable. I thought all that served his themes really well. So that's my favorite movie of the year. And, you know, not a major Oscar contender, but not going to be entirely left out either, I think. This will be its major showing for the Oscars as supporting actress.
Yeah, I agree that she's probably the best part of the film. I really like Samuel L. Jackson in the film as well, and it's disappointing that the categories are sort of stacked this year. It's like, where would he really fit in? I would have liked him maybe in supporting actor, although it could be argued that he'd be best actor. So
it's a tricky one too.
So I'm glad Jennifer Jason Leigh is. I think she's definitely a lock for this category.
Yeah, me too. I think that I have three actresses, for two spots left. And those are Rachel McAdams in Spotlight, Helen Mirren in Trumbo, and Kate Winslet in Steve Jobs. And ultimately, I'm leaving out Kate Winslet because I think that it's just the weakest of the three films as far as Oscar nominations go. And I think that general Academy voters are going to appreciate Spotlight and Trumbo a little bit more, even if I don't necessarily agree with that.
Yeah, but I could certainly see that. And Winslet was in my nominations for a long time. I think what bothered me about her performance in Steve Jobs is that she's supposed to have like a Polish accent.
I knew what you were gonna say there.
Yeah, and in the first act, it's not apparent at all that she's Polish. And it's like she sort of grows into the character in the second and third act. And for me, that's like not a complete like best performance type thing. It's very good.
Yeah. I don't know. The whole Steve Jobs thing, it's not a movie that I loved the first time I saw it. And it hasn't really, like, you know, Bridge of Spies, like I said, it was something that lingered with me. And Steve Jobs is something that I kind of forgot a lot about after I saw it. And it's like a little stagey for me. I kind of wish it was a little bit...
It's a play in three parts.
Exactly. And I kind of wanted something a little bit less on the nose, something that, like, you know, it wasn't so like claustrophobic. Kind of felt like the movie was claustrophobic, and I wish it breathed a little bit more. But you know, I know a lot of people like it and like its performances and like the screenplay, and so I know that it's going to be popping up here and there over these nominations, and I'm certainly not upset about it. But
yeah, I mean, I personally enjoy the format and think that it's Sorkin's movie, even though it's not directed by him. It's definitely. I mean, Boyle is just a figurehead, Danny Boyle.
More or less, yeah.
Yeah, anybody could have directed the film, and it's Aaron Sorkin's film through and through.
Anybody else? I mean, you know, a lot of people probably clamoring for a Kristen Stewart nomination for Clouds of Sils Maria. I don't see it happening, but I wouldn't rule it out either because she was the consensus best supporting actress for most of the critics groups.
Yep, I agree that she's certainly in the conversation. I don't think she's a lock by any means, but I think she could surprise. And the only other thing is maybe like Jane Fonda from Youth.
Yes. Do you want to talk about that?
All right. Well, we can talk about it.
Because I know that you're a big Youth. Youth was in your top 10, right?
It was. It was probably like number 4 or something.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about why you think Jane Fonda should get a nomination?
I don't know how I could really explain it because it's interesting for Jane Fonda because her character only appears late in Youth for about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's a very showy performance. Like, it's just like, here she is, she arrives. And it sort of reminds me of, like, The Third Man with, like, Orson Welles. And, like, people remember his performance in that movie. And he's only in the movie for, like, 10 minutes, too.
A couple scenes, yeah.
Yeah. And it's that kind of like impact.
I think that she was good in the scene. I think that ultimately, and I think you know that I wasn't a huge Youth fan. The whole movie is a collection of these scenes that like didn't add up to too much for me, and I admired the scenes on their own. Like I thought the scene with Rachel Weisz, where it's you know kind of the long take of her, you know, talking about her life and her feelings, and it's kind of an extreme close up on her face while she's getting a massage or something like that, was a really nice scene. And
she's talking to her father, played by Michael Caine, and that.
Yeah, and the scene with Jane Fonda and Harvey Keitel was a fun scene on its own, and there are other little ones here and there that I appreciated, but ultimately it didn't kind of come together in a way that satisfied me, and. You know, I don't know. I don't know that she'll get in, but yeah, it's a category that's definitely up in the air, and I wouldn't rule it out, especially considering her stature in Hollywood and that if you saw the movie, it's hard to forget her in that scene.
Right.
So yeah, she's in contention, and yeah, I don't have any. It's a weird one. I really don't know what to say. Nothing would surprise me at this point of anyone we talked about, and it could be the movie, or excuse me, the category that on Thursday morning we're kind of sitting there with our mouths agape at the screen over like, whoa, what just happened in Best Supporting Actress? And that'd be fun. Best Adapted Screenplay. I think there's six movies for five slots, and those six are The Big Short, Brooklyn, Carol, The Martian, Steve Jobs, and Room. I think at this point the weakest screenplay, it's not quality wise, but in terms of likelihood for a nomination, is Room. So I'm going with the other five as my predictions. Do you agree, or do you think there's anything else that could be that could sneak in?
No, I fully agree.
Yeah.
Like I told you, if I love Steve Jobs the way I do, or so Aaron Sorkin for me is a lock. Like if that movie is to get any nominations, it's for his the screenplay.
Yeah, I think that's a lock, and I think The Big Short is a lock. I think if Room gets in, it'll be at the expense of maybe Brooklyn or The Martian. But I
Really?
think.
The Martian really tight screenplay.
I mean, I'm not a big Martian fan, and I thought that it was fine, but it's just like, it's a movie that, I don't know, it's screenplay, like.
I read the book, so maybe that's what I'm basing it on, is like I thought it hit all the notes from the book very well.
Yeah, I read the book too,
All
and
right.
I agree. I mean, it's not something that I just think that like it's less weighty than the other ones, and so if you're looking at that as a predictor of what's going to get a nomination, that if they're looking for screenplays that are very serious, that The Martian could get left off there.
Okay.
But best original screenplay is a little bit more up in the air, I think. It's kind of a weak. Light category. I think that there's probably four locks here. I've got The Bridge of Spies is definitely in. I think The Hateful Eight gets in, thankfully, hopefully. Inside Out gets in, and Spotlight gets in. Do you agree?
Yes.
Yeah. And then, so what? The last one is kind of a really wild card.
Yeah, it could really be anything. I don't know. Oh, I really like Straight Outta Compton as a
Yeah.
movie.
Yeah.
I could
Was that
see
on your
it.
top 10?
It was right outside, maybe like 12 or 11.
Okay. Yeah, I remember you were a big fan.
Yeah, I was really surprised with that. I didn't expect much, and then I was like, wow, this was far better acted and directed than it had any reason to be being delivered in August.
It was really well acted, I agree. I wasn't a huge fan of the movie. I've watched it twice now, and I find it like super watchable. Like it could be on TV and I sort of get sucked in, but there's just problems I have with it that like kind of prevent me from going over the moon for it.
Yeah.
I think that could definitely be the fifth. I think Ex Machina could probably be a fifth, and I think Trainwreck could be a fifth.
Yeah.
I predicted Trainwreck weeks ago, which seemed like a kind of a crazy thing at the time, and now it doesn't seem quite as crazy, and so I really hope it gets in, because that'll be one of those that I can hang my hat on for a little while. Probably cancel out all the other ridiculous predictions that I made that are never going to happen, but we'll see. Best animated feature?
All right. I mean, for me, if there's three, I'd have to say Inside Out, Annalisa, and Shaun the Sheep.
I agree that those are the top three.
I mean, I liked far more foreign animated films this year, and they tend to like bring them up. So maybe G Kids could have some stuff. I love Cahill Gibran's The Prophet, although it wasn't reviewed very well. So maybe if there's five, that could be in there. I've also heard their late release, The Boy in the World, which I have not had the pleasure of seeing, could
I heard that
also
was really
be
good too. Yeah.
that could also be in there and upset some of the upper movies that could be in there.
I think, sort of the expected nominees are going to be the Peanuts movie and The Good Dinosaur, but I agree that both of those aren't super strong in that some of these other smaller movies that I haven't seen. The only three animated movies I saw this year were... Actually, I saw Minions also. I don't think that's getting in. Oh. But
the less Inside said Out, about Minions, the better.
Inside Out, Shaun the Sheep, and Anomalisa are definitely in. And then the other two, we'll see. But...
I like it when they mention... I mean, far and away, I think it's Inside Out's to lose. I mean...
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I like Anomalisa pretty well, but Inside Out is a cut above. And I like it when they mention these smaller foreign-produced animated films, because at least it gives more opportunity for people to go out and see them.
Yeah, it was great. Last year, I was really hoping, because I was more ahead on my animated movie watching than I am this year, and I had seen both Song of the Sea and The Tale of Princess Kaguya, which were G-Kids movies, and I was really hoping one of them got in, and they both ended up getting in, which was wonderful.
Right. No, I love both those films as well.
So it'll be nice if there's like a little surprise there from a smaller studio, and hopefully that means we get a chance to see something good.
Documentary feature.
Yes. Okay. So, Amy, I think is probably the front runner. Definitely a lock for a nomination because it did really well at the box office and, you know, people admire it. And it's a director, who I think a lot of people thought got snubbed for Senna a couple of years ago.
Yeah. I love this director too. I thought Senna is one of my favorite documentaries ever made.
Yeah. It's really good. And did you see Amy?
Yes, I've seen Amy.
Yeah, it was. It didn't make my top 10, but it was on my top 20.
Yeah. No, I don't even really care for Amy Winehouse, but this movie made me care. I thought it was great.
I love Amy Winehouse, and this movie just reduced me to a puddle of tears. So, I think The Look of Silence probably gets in because you know, there was so much love for The Act of Killing, and I think that Joshua Oppenheimer is kind of in the club now and that people will respond to this one. The fact that they got The Act of Killing into an Oscar nomination, I think The Look of Silence is far less obtuse than that movie was, so it should probably get in. After that, I mean, I think that Cartel Land has a good chance of getting in because there was just so much that went into that movie to bring it to life, and it's really powerful. I think... What Happened, Miss Simone probably has a good chance, maybe, because, it's Netflix, and Netflix is pushing it really hard. It's very good, and, you know, I guess the thing against it is that maybe it's too similar to Amy as far as subject matter goes, but I think it probably gets in still. And then, I mean, after that, I don't even know, like, The Hunting Ground I have is my fifth, because of its subject matter, and its director is Kirby Dick, who's gotten nominated in the past. And I haven't seen it yet, but I hear pretty good things about it. Going Clear is definitely a contender, too. I wondered about that one just because, you know, is Hollywood going to nominate a documentary that's so critical of Scientology? It's a question I'm curious about.
Well... I think you and I can both agree that Amy and The Look of Silence are probably locks.
Yeah, those are the two that I feel most comfortable about.
Outside of that, this is a category which could make or break a lot of Oscar prediction balance.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I think Heart of a Dog is well liked and reviewed.
Listen to Me, Marlin was one of my favorite movies of the year that didn't make my top 10 list, and definitely one of my favorite documentaries. It was wonderful, and I don't think it's going to get in because it's really kind of obtuse, but very, very good.
Yeah, I didn't care for it at all.
Fair enough. Yeah, I could see that, yeah.
I really loved Where to Invade Next when I saw it in Toronto, and it has the big name director behind it. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big name. I haven't seen it yet. He named me Malala, has a big name, Davis Guggenheim, yep. and subject matter that I think people are going to embrace, even if I don't think it's the best made movie. And
Yeah,
I
Where Do I Invade Next was Michael Moore. That's
right, yes. And I thought another one that's on the shortlist, Winter on Fire, is another Netflix documentary that's really terrific, and kind of just missed my top 20 list.
and maybe my second favorite documentary of the year was Best of Enemies. Did you see that one?
I did. I liked it. I liked it quite a bit.
Yeah, that one's really good. So I mean, I think the category for those three spots could be any number of these.
Yeah, so like you said, it's going to make or break some prediction lists, and it'll be fun to see what happens. And ultimately, all I hope is that people seek these movies out, even some of the ones that don't get nominations that are just on the short list, because it's a really strong group. And best foreign language film. I think we both probably have a little bit less to say about this category than some of the other ones, but I really hope. The only one I've actually seen of the shortlist, but is definitely a movie that I love, is Mustang, and I hope it gets in. I think it probably will. But have you seen Son of Saul?
Yeah, I've seen Son of Saul and Mustang. Those are the only two I've seen, and I prefer Mustang myself. I think Son of Saul will probably win the category.
It seems that way.
As far as the other three, besides for those two, it could be any one of them. I don't know.
Yeah,
But that's how they like to do the foreign categories, I guess.
it ends up being movies that a lot of times don't come out until the first quarter of the following year. So these are movies that we're probably going to see and talk about in March and April and stuff like that. And maybe this is a good point to transition over to. We want to talk about our top 10 lists because there's a couple foreign language films on mine that aren't eligible for Oscars because they were in contention for foreign language last year.
Yeah, that sounds fine.
Do you want to start or should I start?
What, for my top 10 features of the year? All right, I guess I'll start. While I have Spotlight as my favorite film of the year, we had talked about you enjoying Hateful Eight as yours. Spotlight for me is just the epitome of what a research movie should be. I mean, I'm a huge fan of All the President's Men and Zodiac, so I really like that kind of formula in a movie and just trying to get to the solution at the end. I mean, there's a scene in Spotlight where they're just doing research, looking through like old manuals in a basement with rulers, and I thought that scene was fantastic and riveting. I think other people would look at it and say, "Yeah, okay, it's just a scene." A lot of moments in Spotlight stand out for me, and I really like it. Number two for me was Mad Max Fury Road. Three was The Duke of Burgundy.
I haven't seen that yet.
All right. Would you like me to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, tell people why they should see it,
All
and
right.
myself included.
All right. So The Duke of Burgundy is actually a really tough sell. Because you look at the definition, well, not the definition, the summary of the movie, and it's basically about two women in love, in a BDSM relationship, and that would turn off a lot of people from watching the movie, but it goes much deeper than that. It really makes you the relationship between the submissive and the dominant. As you watch it, you see it's more difficult for the dominant to meet the submissive's needs, and that she really loves the submissive, but it's hard for her to keep on doing these commands and things that the submissive wants. So it's deeper than what typically would look on the outside. It's just like maybe a smut film, I guess.
Is it like a setup is almost like a thriller, or is it more just a relational drama?
It's more like a relational drama, but it has like some of like I forget the term for it, but it's like a 1970s vibe to it, like one of those like feature films, like almost like a grindhousey tint to it.
I know what you mean. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I was really blown away by it. It came out early 2015, so
Yeah, it did. And I think it's on Netflix to stream, and
it
it's been
is.
in my queue for sometime, but I, you know, it's on my long list of things I still need to see.
Well, I'd highly recommend you put it higher.
I will. I'll do that.
I'm going to just go through the list because I think outside of that, you probably have seen a lot of these. Brooklyn was 4, 5 was Steve Jobs, 6 was Youth, 7 was Carol, 8 was Room, 9 was Clouds of Sils Maria, and 10 was Creed.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, I've seen all of those except for Room, which I mentioned earlier. Brooklyn just missed my top 10. Creed was, you know, something that I really, really loved. I wasn't a huge Clouds of Sils Maria fan, and I'm not really sure why. Just didn't totally come together for me. I don't know. Olivier Assayas is like this director that, like, I know a lot of other film writers really, really love, and I haven't seen a film of his that really stuck with me yet, but, you know, I'm sure one day.
That's funny, though, because, like, a lot of film writers will say, like, Federico Fellini is, like, a top-tier director, and you have to see all his films, and for the longest time, I couldn't get through 8.5. I couldn't understand why. I still haven't finished it, but I enjoy Amarcord and Dolce Vita a lot more. But
yeah, and it's funny because Youth is such a, like, so reminiscent of Fellini.
Right.
So, yes, I mean, Carol, I'll start going through my list, and we have a few that overlap. And number one, as I mentioned, is The Hateful Eight, which I think is probably my favorite Quentin Tarantino movie, and I definitely need to see it again to decide if I think that's true. But it's just it's working on so many different planes, that, and that's what I really loved about it, is how it's this mystery, but that's like almost the least important thing that it's trying to do. And, you know, so many good performances and scenes of dialogue and everything you hope for out of a Tarantino movie is just absolutely delivered. Carol is my number two, which I thought for sure was going to be my number one for, you know, from when I saw it until last week when I saw The Hateful Eight. And the two of them together, I kind of looked at last year halfway through this decade we're in of movies, and I put together a list of my top 50 favorite movies of the decade, and I honestly think that The Hateful Eight and Carol are probably my number two and three of this decade so far, behind Inside Llewyn Davis, which is my favorite. And Carol is just such a beautiful love story. The detail, the period details, and the cinematography and the score, I think were all perfect. And the performances ultimately is what brought it home. Was I thought Rooney Mara was spectacular. Cate Blanchett, also spectacular. And the framing device of the movie, I thought, really brought it home in a really nice way, too. My number three is The Big Short, which I just couldn't. I walked away from it, and I've seen it three times now, absolutely in awe of how Adam McKay made something about the financial crisis that was this funny, and then made a movie as angry as this comedy is. You know, it's like working on both levels, and I don't know. I didn't ever expect it to be so funny or so angry and kind of serious about everything that happened, and that it explained everything to the viewer with, in a way that was palatable and amusing, was really neat. And I thought the ensemble performances were really strong as well.
It's funny though, like The Big Short is one of the films, I have only seen it once myself, and it was like maybe really close to when it was first premiering. And I remember really liking it too. I think that the cutaways that it does without spoiling too much are hilarious.
Yeah, they're really funny.
I think that was the
first point when I like kind of sat up in my, you know, that feeling like when you're like realize that like, oh, this movie is really clicking with me. Like, yeah. That was the first moment in The Big Short where I was like, oh wow, okay.
It's like they went there.
Yeah, exactly. Like, whoa, cool, okay. This is not what I was expecting, and I'm really into it.
I think there's been a lot of movies that have done the financial crisis. I mean, this is the first one to really make it into a comedy and make it more palatable for like a wider audience, I think.
Yeah.
And I really do want to see it again. I might go see it in the theaters again.
Yeah, there's something to be said about a movie, for me at least, a movie that like I'm really happy to recommend to everyone, and that's been The Big Short for me, alongside Spotlight. The two movies that, my boss asked me what he can go see, and I told him both of those, and he appreciated both the recommendations and my parents and my friends, and being able to talk about both of them with people. And that's something that's important to me as somebody who loves movies, is being able to have a conversation with people about what I liked or what I didn't like about these movies, even if they're imperfect. I appreciate that there's a lot to think about and a lot to talk about. So yeah, that's why one of the reasons why The Big Short is my number three. My number four is something that I alluded to a little while ago, a movie that was ineligible for Best Foreign Language Film of the Year because it was actually nominated last year, and that's Timbuktu.
Yep, I've seen that.
Okay, and yeah, it's just something that, like, I mean,
You can talk about it. I'm sure a lot of people haven't seen it.
yeah, it's for anyone who's curious, it's came out of the country of Mali, and it's about just the city, the titular city, and it's being taken over by jihadists, but not on like a, it's kind of complicated where everyone's still living their lives, but the rules have changed and they're kind of dealing with it. And there's a beautiful scene where there's some people trying to play soccer, but they're not allowed to anymore, so they don't have a ball and they're just pretending to play soccer, which just like kind of floored me. And some of the other things going on, people getting arrested because they're playing music or they're singing songs or they're kicking a ball, and the way that these people are kind of trying to figure out life in this new regime, if you will, is one of the things that stuck out to me. And the cinematography in the film also really bowled me over, probably the best of the year for me. Yeah, that was my number one foreign language film of the year. And number five on my list is Mad Max Fury Road, which we've talked about quite a bit. Number six, I mentioned earlier also, that's Mississippi Grind, with my favorite male performance of the year and Ben Mendelsohn, and one of my favorite supporting performances of the year in Ryan Reynolds. And have you
Can I tell you a funny story about that before you go
Yeah,
into it
no,
more?
please, because I was just about to ask you if you've seen it.
No, I haven't seen it. But when I
Okay.
saw the poster, I thought that Ben Mendelsohn was actually the guy who played the supporting actor in Sideways.
Oh, Thomas Hayden Church.
Yes.
Yeah. I can see that.
I was like, that looks like Thomas Hayden Church. I should watch this movie. And then I saw the trailer. I'm like, wait, that's not exactly him.
Well, I think you should see it because it's really good, and it's just such a nifty little movie about these two guys who one of them has a real gambling problem, and the other one kind of has, he's his good luck charm, and so they end up following each other down the Mississippi River to New Orleans to play in a poker tournament, and just all sorts of stuff happens along the way. And I also want to call out, there's one of my favorite scenes of the year is happens early in this film, and Alfre Woodard is in it, and she's only in it for one scene, but she plays Ben Mendelsohn's bookie, and it's just a really, really well written and acted scene where you have this woman show up, and it looks like they're old friends, and she's kind of talking about life and her kids, and then all of a sudden it kind of turns on a dime, and she's like, "Where's my money?" And yeah, really, really well done. That comes from the filmmaking duo of Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck, who made, among other films, Half Nelson with Ryan Gosling, and Sugar, which was a kind of a neat little story about immigrants playing baseball. But that's my number six. My number seven is Spotlight, which we talked about. My number eight is Phoenix. Did you see, have you seen this?
Yep, that was my number one for foreign feature this year.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay. So you appreciate it. And
Yes.
it's a German movie about a woman who survived the Holocaust, but needs to have facial reconstruction surgery and ends up finding her husband who may have betrayed her, and trying to, gosh, how do you even describe
No,
their.
I mean I get the sense that she really does want him back.
Oh, yeah,
Like
definitely.
even
Definitely.
though like he might have sold her out to the
I think she's
Nazis.
in absolute denial about that.
Right.
And but what he's asking of her is such like an interesting puzzle. And a lot of people compared the film to Vertigo. I'm pretty sure I did when I reviewed it, but I thought it was it lives up to that comparison. It's that good. And definitely. That one's on Netflix streaming. So if you haven't seen it, I recommend you check it out. My number nine, I mentioned a little earlier as well. It's Sicario from director Denis Villeneuve, which I'm certainly did not pronounce correctly, but so
well,
is life.
I'm glad you tried.
And that's a really great movie about the Mexican drug war. And my number 10 is something that I'm sure a lot of people haven't seen. It's my only documentary in my top 10, and it's called Ballet 422.
I have not seen it, but I have heard of it.
Yeah, and Magnolia Pictures released it earlier this year. And really just, it's very in the tradition of Frederick Weissman, and there's no talking heads or anything like that, and it's just sort of observing this ballet dancer who's getting a chance to choreograph his own show in New York at one of the most prestigious ballets in the world, and all the things that go into it, and kind of him trying to navigate the political waters of this situation where he's this youngster who's given a great opportunity, and there's others who are dancing for him that don't necessarily respect his opinions, and the composers and the costumers and all the other people involved, and it's really well shot. It's amazing, and this the director whose name is escaping me right now, but he's a cinematographer by trade, and he's actually I think the cinematographer on Trainwreck, and there's some shots in this movie that just blew me away of this theater and the dancers and things, and really it's only like 75 minutes long, but it was my favorite documentary of the year.
Interesting.
And I don't want to get into honorable mentions because we could be talking for hours, but my number 11 of the year, which I was really bummed didn't make my top 10, was Tangerine.
Yeah, I appreciate that one too.
Yeah. So those are our top 10s, and we'll see. I mean, I think we probably both are batting about like 50% when it comes to movies that are going to end up with Oscar nominations on Thursday. I definitely have a few on my list that will, and definitely have a few that won't. But that's kind of, it's kind of nice to have a mix of things that everyone has seen and things no one has seen, and things that you love recommending to people, and other ones that are kind of more personal treasures, and it's been a fun, it's been I think a really good year for all types of movies. So I guess that's we'll probably leave it there, and feel free to leave comments and talk about what a terrible job we did trying to predict the Oscars. In the meantime, thank you for listening, and I'll leave a link to both mine and Max's top 10 lists in the show notes. You could read more about our thoughts, and we'll be back again sometime soon to talk more movies. So Max, thanks for coming on again.
Thanks for having me, and thanks to everybody for listening.
Yep, we'll talk to you again soon. Bye.